Today's date is July 29th, 1997. Today's speaker is Peter Cohen. The title is Building with Sticks, the Chapel of St. Benedict.
For those of you that weren't here yesterday, my name is Peter Cohen. I'm an architect in Seattle, and I teach architecture at the University of Washington. I have never taught architecture or tried to teach anything about architecture to non-architecture students, so forgive me if I'm boring you. I'm trying to. It's been really a helpful experience for me to try and understand and put down what I think about architecture in a way that I hope everyone can understand and possibly agree with. Also, for those of you that weren't here yesterday, this talk originates from some of the things that I teach in architecture school. I think the state of the architectural profession isn't very good right now. It sometimes seems quite depressing. A lot of architects are really interested in finding new styles that are their main characteristic is that they're radically different from the last one, and most clients want buildings that look like they did 100 years ago when building techniques were very different. So it's kind of a mess. One of the ways that I think out of it, or one of the things that I think architecture can do, is go back to some of its roots. Architect means master carpenter from the Greek. Actually, there's an older Sanskrit word I found out called toxon, which means use of the axe. And so architecture was once very closely linked to building and has been separated quite radically in the last 100, 150 years. One of the ways that I think architecture can rediscover some of the mystery and power that it once had is by going back and understanding a little bit more of about construction and the way things go together. And that in the way things go together, considering materials, the properties of materials, how similar materials go together, how different materials meet, there is a syntax that can be developed very much like a language. And the way language, if you put two words together properly, it can become a poem. I think that buildings can also become poems just by virtue of the way the materials are assembled. So, if you'll indulge me for a few moments, I want to talk a little bit about some of the background behind the work that's being done that I'll show you. It all started back in 1850 when an architect, a German architect named Gottfried Semper, first coined the phrase tectonics and began to look at classifying buildings according to the way they're built. He had a good friend, I don't know his first name, Cuvier, who I believe was a zoologist and was a competitor of Darwin, I believe, and was trying to figure out a way to classify flora and fauna according to their physical characteristics. And Semper thought that perhaps instead of looking at architecture on the basis of styles, that really there might be more similarities to be found if we looked at architecture according to their physical attributes. And so that was a germ that was planted in his friend by Cuvier. He was in exile in London for much of his life, and he went to the Great Exhibition in 1851, which was held in the Crystal Palace, which is another famous piece of architecture. And there he saw a replica of a Caribbean hut. And all of a sudden it clicked on him that this little hut, this very primitive dwelling that contained all of the essential elements of any architecture. And what was there was a raised earthwork, which was the way the building sat on the ground. In the middle of that earthwork was a hearth, which obviously formed the center of the dwelling. On top of the earthwork was a series of posts that supported a roof. So the post's primary purpose was to support the roof, and then also the fourth element was the enclosure, which in this case was a woven or plated series of reeds. And so he had his taxonomy, if you will, for architecture. The earthwork became anything built of masonry and usually used to build, bring a building up out of the ground. And he called that stereotomy, which I think comes from cutting and mass or something like that. It refers to masonry construction. And he called the actual framework part of the building tectonics, which refers back to carpentry, made of sticks that are put together into a frame. And the weaving, which he actually thought was one of the first building elements, because that would have been built almost as clothing or other forms of shelter before there was earthwork and frame, was kind of incorporated in his system in the upper part of the building, the sky part of the building, the posts and the roof. There's another interesting story about the first dwellings in Samaria were supposedly reeds that were not pulled out of the ground, but basically they were just tied together up above, and they formed a very primitive dwelling which was rooted in the earth and then met the sky. And so today, as we think about architecture according to its construction, we can actually look at it this way. We can look at the earthwork, the stereotomy. Every building has to meet the ground somehow, and sticks aren't very good for that. And we can look at the frame part of the building, the tectonics, which is a way that the building meets the sky. Masonry elements aren't very good for roofs, although they can be used. And so every building, somewhere in its height, has this critical juncture between mass and frame, heavy and light, earth and sky, and a lot of people who are interested in tectonics say that this is really an important place in any building. I'm going to show you some buildings that are based upon, I think, a very strong order of construction, and today I'm going to show you buildings that are primarily frame buildings made with sticks. They all are, I think, evidence of a very careful thinking about the way it goes together. And I think from the way the building goes together is where the power lies and a lot of the beauty of these buildings. And then on Thursday, we'll look at buildings that are primarily made with stones that reach up out of the earth quite high before the tectonics takes over. I think I have one quote here that I want to read. This is from Marco Frascari, another architectural educator at the University of Pennsylvania. And he says, "Architecture is an art because it is interested not only in the original need for shelter, but also in putting together spaces and materials in a meaningful manner. So, you put together spaces to make a building. That represents the functional aspect of architecture, but then you also put together materials. This occurs through formal and actual joints." So the formal joints, he's not saying that they're formal like a tuxedo, but form, joints between two forms. And actual joints are the joints of materials. "The joint, that is the fertile detail, is the place where both the construction and the construing of architecture takes place." So, I'm going to show you, so to tie it back into architecture in a very simple way, I'm hoping that as I show these buildings, you'll see that they're very modern. They don't resemble any traditional architecture, or they don't represent any traditional architecture. There will be some similarities simply in the manner that they use materials. But what I'm hoping that you'll see is a connection between these modern buildings and vernacular buildings, which typically, in terms of their form, are quite simple. And they seem to derive most of their power and most of their strength and most of their beauty from the straightforward way that they're assembled using very traditional building materials. I'll show you two mundane uses of buildings. I'll show you a truck garage and a warehouse. The warehouse that I'm going to show you actually is in Switzerland, and it's the one that holds these cough drops. If any of you have ever bought Ricola herbal, natural herb cough drops, they were probably stored in the building that I'll show you. I was going to pass them around, but my daughter likes them too much. And then I'm going to show you a church that's built in Switzerland. So from the profane to the divine, or from the mundane to the sublime, or something like that. I'll be particularly interested in feedback about the chapel, because any of you who have any kind of theological training, I would love to have some sense of the way it might interpret, you know, a particular branch of Christianity or whatever it may be. Yeah, Peter.
What would you say about the building on the right here in terms of what you just talked about, that junction between, would you say that this is one where it occurs very low to the ground?
Very low to the ground. In both cases, these are, and that's what I'll show you today. But it's still, you can't see the detail here, but here it's just an amazing detail. These are buildings that were originally way up north in Sweden, up in the what would be considered Lapland, that portion of Sweden. And of course, you know that in permafrost, you can't make a foundation deep enough. The earth will heave and it'll push the building up out of the ground. So in this particular case, they don't even try and put the buildings in the ground. They just put them on rocks at the four corners, and they can adjust them whenever they need to, I suppose. this is kind of an interesting building to show, considering that we're also building a new garage at Holden Village. This is a truck garage that is about 60 kilometers south of Oslo in Rolsøy, Norway. Does that anybody have an interpretation of that? Rolvso/Y, Norway.
Oy means island.
Anyway, it was built in 1989 by a young architect who at the time was working for the Norwegian State Railway. His name is Jan Olaf Jensen, and he's gone on to do other things and teach at the university there. But the Norwegian State Railway was setting up a number of stations where trains would be unloaded. The big kind of semi containers that are carried on trains would be unloaded and attached to trailer trucks. And the device that would do this was a big 42-ton forklift truck. A huge vehicle that needed to be protected and serviced. And so Jan Olaf Jensen was given the task of designing a garage for this huge vehicle. You can get a sense of the scale of this building by looking at the door handles on the big doors. This is the front of the building, and those doors slide open on that big wide frame. So here are the door handles down here. So you can get a sense that a person is probably about this tall. Maybe not that tall. It sits out in a valley. Fairly flat farming land, and I always am, one of the questions that I always pose for myself when I look at this building is what I would do or how I would react if I was a farmer in this valley and somebody wanted to build this gigantic garage for this forklift truck, and I think I would be probably quite pleased with the result. You can see here's another building off to the foreground that holds some smaller equipment. Well, it's round. One of the reasons that it's round is because it's in this agricultural area, and it somehow seems like a big agrarian building. Another reason is because of the wind, that it's such a big, tall building that keeping it round allows the wind to deflect around it more easily. You'll see another reason that it's round when I show you the inside. Here's a peek into the inside with one of the doors slid open, and here are some architectural drawings that we'll look at very briefly. The plan is in the lower right, and so you can see there's a paved portion that basically has pavers on the ground, and that's where the truck sits. The round, the oval shape of the building actually allows there to be these two raised concrete platforms on either side, and you can see that on the photo looking into the building, where they can get into the truck, where they can service the truck, and where they can move around it. The actual shed where tools and things for servicing the truck are contained is a little added building off to the right that I don't really have a good picture of, but it's just almost like a little appendage onto the side of the building. When you do open up the garage door, you see that the actual structure of the building is a huge steel frame. And here's the steel frame here, very simple, with four big steel columns that rise up and support two big steel beams going this way and one that runs right down the middle. The one for the middle is so that they can actually, there's a crane on that one and they can lift stuff. I suppose it's probably for doing things like lifting an engine out of a 42-ton truck. Apparently it'll lift 15 tons, the crane.
Why is the roof open?
The roof's not open. That's where some of the magic of this building starts. On top of the square frame of the building is a regular metal roof. That metal roof actually slopes towards the center, and all the water, rainwater collects and comes toward the front. The juncture between the curved wooden wall and the rectangular steel frame inside is clad in corrugated fiberglass. And so, in order for people to see inside the building without artificial lights, the whole roof, you can see it here, it does several things. It separates that initial frame, the tectonics, the columns and the roof, from the outer walls, that cladding, but it also brings this marvelous light down into the building. Here are a couple of other shots. I don't have very good shots of this. I haven't been to this building, and you can see some of them were taken from quite small photographs, so excuse the texture of some of these slides. The manner in which the wooden frame attaches to the steel frame is absolutely marvelous, and I won't go into too many of the details, but you can begin to see the way it happens here. The wooden wall and its supports, actually the supports follow the radius, the curve of the wall, and then they reach across to inside the flange of the steel frame, and that can rotate in any position. There's a little member that can rotate. So these beautiful wooden members just rotate around as they follow the curve of the outside wall. Another really interesting thing, one of the other reasons for the curve of the outside wall is that it gives it much more added strength. And so you can see the boards aren't very thick that are wrapped around the outside of the building, but the columns themselves are actually 6 feet apart, which is much farther apart than they would normally be able to be. But in this case, because of the strength and bending that wood has, they can be spaced quite far apart. The other interesting thing, I talked yesterday about columns that actually were smaller at their base and their top, because wood is much stronger in carrying gravity loads straight down than it is in buckling. And so usually columns are sized because of buckling forces. As you push on the two ends of a stick, if you'll think about it, it's not gonna smash, it's gonna buckle. And so likewise, these glulam columns, I think you can barely see here, actually get thicker in the middle and then cut back a couple of lambs, a couple of pieces of wood, and so they can be thinner at the top and the bottom. And that really is just an expression of the actual gravity load that they're carrying rather than their load in buckling. So here's the evocative photo of the steel frame with its framing and roof above, and then the corrugated fiberglass that allows the light to come in and filter through the wooden framing of the outside wall. And the cross bracing, of course, is so you've got a steel frame, but you need to keep it upright against lateral forces, pushing forces like wind loads. And that's what this cross bracing is for. And it's really nice the way that meets too, in a big steel ring so that each one bolts into it. And there it is, sorry again for the photograph, in this very agrarian landscape. And I would have to say that I believe it fits in quite well. That looks like a big barn in the background, and you can almost see how it fits in. And just a little detail. because it does, it's not heated, and it really doesn't need to be insulated. At this point where the wall curves around, that would have been a very difficult detail to try and figure out how that curved wall was going to meet the front frame. And so it's actually just left open. There's a little space there, obviously way too small for a person to squeeze into, between that outside wall and the frame.
Why wouldn't you want it insulated if you had to work on this truck in the middle of the
Well, apparently it's not that often that it happens. It probably was just decided that it wasn't worth it to do it. What most impresses me about this building is that it was built by a state agency. You know, usually you don't see buildings that are built with this much care and that are built by.
Well, is that open space that the wind and stoke and whistling through there?
Well, I don't think it's that big. Yeah, I don't think it's. I think it's just a like. It may be an inch or something. Yeah.
Is it also an agricultural truck?
No, it's a big specialized truck.
So it isn't seasonal.
No, it's used all year round. It's used all year round. The other buildings, I'm sure, are insulated and are used for kind of human occupation. The other thing is, I didn't show you. Apparently, the doors operate almost with a finger. They've got them balanced just right, and so they swing out. There's a really beautiful building on, if any of you are from Seattle, on the Montlake Cut, just as you're coming into the Montlake Cut by the university, and it's the old boat shed. And it's got these big steel wings, and the doors slide open. I really think it's a wonderful way for a building to open up. The next building that I'm going to show you is the warehouse for Ricola Cough Drops, or the Ricola Company. It's in Laufen, Switzerland. It was designed by a couple of Swiss architects, Jacques Herzog and Pierre de Meuron, built in 1986, the Ricola Storage Building. This is an early sketch of the idea for the building, and I just wanted to show you the plan of the building. It really is an extraordinarily dumb box. It has a fairly sophisticated system inside of it. It's got some kind of automated shelving system that somehow it stocks and unloads the shelves automatically. I don't know what operates it. I've never really seen the inside of it. But it's just a gigantic warehouse. It's about 60 feet tall. And it has this little loading dock on the back side of it where the trucks back in. The task of Herzog and de Meuron was to somehow make this gigantic building. It's a similar task to the one that Jan Olaf Jensen had, somehow to make this gigantic building fit into its surroundings in a way that it wasn't just a giant metal-clad box. It's one of the most obsessive buildings I know in terms of this notion of developing a series of details and order of assembly. And you guys might think it's just totally bizarre, but it's actually, I love it, I think, because of its obsession. This is not a child on a tricycle. This is a man on a motorcycle. And so you can get a sense of the height of this building. As I said, it's 60 feet tall. The building is actually a steel frame with what are called stress skin panels, basically these big rigid panels that have a rigid, something like plywood on the inside, and then styrofoam sandwich, and then on the outside is another sort of a plywood with metal cladding on the outside of it. The metal cladding is semi-weatherproof. In other words, It could withstand a lot of weather, but actually it's not the best thing for the outside layer of a building. And so Herzog and de Meuron basically designed this siding that goes onto the outside of this building. In Europe, there's a long tradition of what are known as rain screen walls, in which walls breathe just like we force any of you that are familiar with construction in this country, all roofs have to be ventilated so that the air can get into the roof and dry out the insulation. We don't require that in walls, and it's actually a shame because a lot of the same thing happens in walls. And any of you that are remodeling contractors know that if you have ripped open a wall that was built since we required a lot of insulation in walls, oftentimes studs are rotted and walls don't last nearly as long as they used to when they weren't required to be so tight, because water condenses inside and causes all kinds of problems. So this is actually a rain screen wall. There's the inside layer that performs a lot of the weatherproofing, and then there's this outside layer that keeps the rest of the rain and the weather off of that, but it's also breathable, so it allows circulation to come up between the two walls and dry out the internal wall whenever it does get wet. It's this building is in an old limestone quarry. And here's I won't go too much into architectural details, but here you can see the concrete slab. This is the big steel frame inside. This thing with the zigzag pattern is actually those stress skin panels, the insulation and the first layer of cladding. And then on top of those panels, basically what's happened is Herzog and Demiron made this comb-like foundation. So there are these little fins that stick out from the slab at intervals. And little posts are, you could almost call them furring strips that travel up the whole length of the building and actually beyond the length of the building, onto which these brackets are attached, and then finally these wood fiber cement panels, which form the final layer of cladding to this building. And so it can breathe, but most of the weather hits these panels and comes dripping off safely away from the building. The only thing that's different is they used a little bit of different strategy at the top of the building to keep the rain off. They extended the post way up and then went with a very large overhang, and you can see that here. And so at each one of these brackets, there's a post that comes down along the wall, and then it sits on one of those little comb-like members of the foundation. There are a lot on the one hand, this is purely a building about construction. It's this rigorous idea. There's the way it hits the ground with this concrete comb. There are the posts that rise up from it, the brackets that are attached to the post, and then these panels are laid in a way that they almost look like stacked lumber. Then you could start to make associations, which Herzog and Demiron will never say, but they're always there, and I think that's part of the richness of the architecture. For instance, this is a building that's full of shelves, and in a lot of ways, this outside cladding looks like shelves. The second thing is, it sits in a limestone quarry, which is all about sort of sedimental layers compressing on top of one another and gradually compressing slower and closer and closer together. And when you look at the patterning of this, there's that notion of compression. The layers, there are a lot of reasons for this patterning. If you'll see, the first five bands are close together, the next five are a little farther apart, and the last five are the farthest yet. And there's a two-thirds relationship, that this is two-thirds of this and this is two-thirds of this. But there's that sense of, you know, limestone, the creation of limestone is these layers are put one on top of the other and everything compresses down. The other really interesting association that I think Herzog and Demiron would never make is that there's something that's very neoclassical about this. There's a base, there's a middle, and then there's this cornice on top. So if you squint your eyes a little bit, you could almost imagine the same kind of proportions existing in a 19th century office building in Pioneer Square or wherever. In any case, finally at the end of the building, they allow the internal layer of the cladding to expose itself at the loading dock. My question about it has always been, why not protect it there? I think there's a I'd love to ask them that. I'm sure they have a good answer. They seem to have good answers for everything. It's a really great gesture in the notion that it finally oozes out where the rectangle ends. It finally oozes out that internal layer and reveals what's behind. But I wonder about the actual weathering. The other thing is in continuing this notion that it's just a series of stacked elements. A really interesting corner happens because they decide not to really try and miter the corner, but just let one side extend out beyond and the other side butt into it. And then finally, in order to support the end of this board, they actually scab on a little piece that's attached to the ends of those brackets. And it creates the strongest impression there. And then here, where the loading dock oozes out of the building, of how the building is actually constructed. I'm not going to go on, but I could go on for a long time about this building because it's got so many little things. Like on all of the, so from each one of these little fins comes a post, and then on the post are attached these brackets, the one that supports this piece and the one that supports this piece. These panels are a specific length, probably close to 8 feet, although I'm sure they're metric. Where the panel joint occurs, there's a double bracket, one on each side of the post. So the one bracket picks up this panel and one bracket picks up this panel.
The question.
Yeah.
Is that the final outside or is that the inside?
That's the outside. Yeah, and actually I love this picture too. I love the picture of the outside of the building itself and the wall of the limestone quarry.
It didn't look like it in the far away pictures, that was all.
Is that like the old asbestos cement board?
It's similar. It's the same type, but it's wood fiber cement. So it's not, but it's very, very similar, very durable, and it almost looks like a sheet of concrete.
Yeah. It looks that from a practical standpoint, the first thing I think of is, are you going to have 5,000 swallows up in there? Or
yeah, I never thought of that. That's a good one. Maybe it's okay. That would actually be kind of neat. I like the way they extended those posts up beyond the top of the building too, so you get that little strip of the sky and it starts to blend in with the silver of the metal clad panels. Okay, now the main from the profane to the sacred. This is a small town in the Surselva Mountains in Switzerland. Their chapel burned down or was destroyed. I think it may have been destroyed by an avalanche because I think it was actually stone. And so they had to build a new one. The architect that they hired to design the building was Peter Zumthor, who actually is one of the older Swiss architects who are involved in this whole movement of really concentrating on the order of construction. And he designed the building with the knowledge that this was actually going to be built by the townspeople. So this is a building that was designed with loving care, and it was assembled with loving care, and I think it shows the care from both parties. As you look up from the town, and here's a site plan, and so you can see this, the town is strung along this road that travels through the valley. This is going up the hill, and here's a little path from the town that goes through the mountains, perhaps to another town. And the new chapel is perched up above the town, and that's what you see right there. I think one of the interesting things about this chapel in terms of traditional Swiss architecture is that usually in this part of Switzerland, all of the buildings are made of wood except the church. And the church is made of usually white painted stone. And so Peter Zumthor chose, perhaps because the villagers were going to build it, to use a material that they may have been more familiar with. A lot like the truck garage, when you first look at it, it looks like a silo. it looks like a building, or perhaps a watchtower, or, you know, the tower of a fortress if it were made out of stone. As you come up the trail and come around to the building, you realize that it's not a round or an oval building. It's actually, wait a minute, I have the name for the shape. It's a teardrop shape, but the actual technical name is, hold on, lemniscate. It's a lemniscate, which is actually half of a figure eight. There's a mathematical formula for deriving one of these shapes. And so here is the back side of the building. The really interesting thing about this building too, the back side of it, is that oftentimes in Switzerland they'll build these wedges near the mountains that are designed to divert avalanches around buildings. And this is a building, from what I've read, it's actually not in a place that's in much danger of avalanche, but it's actually shaped as though it were designed to divert an avalanche if one were to occur.
What are those buildings used for?
This is a chapel. I'll show you the inside in a moment. So you come up the little path there, and the first thing that you see is the bell cote, which is shaped like a ladder. A really interesting ladder, though, because obviously you could never climb it. The rungs get closer and closer together as you move up and down towards the bottom, obviously. It would be impossible to climb. And the bell is at the top. There's a little drawing of the bell cote in that slide as well. It's a wooden frame, there's a really simple concrete foundation, and then it's, as you can see, clad in shingles. The entrance is really quite interesting because, I don't know if you can see it here, but the concrete foundation is quite small in this building. It travels down the hill, but the stairs themselves are a big concrete mass, and they're separated from the building. As you come up to the door, there's a gap. A very small gap, but you actually almost have to leave the ground as you enter this building. You go off of this concrete plinth that's attached to the ground and you step up into the wooden construction, and into this little antechamber that narthex, I guess you would call it, that's very small, but that's kind of attached to the side of this teardrop shape. Here is, everything is extraordinarily simple. The handrail, no intermediate rails, which obviously wouldn't be allowed in this country, but there's the little boot scrape, so you can see this is a real farming community. And the handle is just this amazingly simple wrought iron lever that's allowed actually to age and rust. This is the inside. The view from this chapel, from entering the chapel, is absolutely spectacular. You walk into the building and there are no windows at eye level. You've left the earth. You've left kind of the realm of the everyday and you're up in the clouds almost. Here we are, we've come up the entry, there's the separation right there, we've come into the door and we're still not quite in the building. The building is absolutely pure. Here you can see the columns that travel up and hold out up the outside cladding. And you're still not in the building. You can see that right here. Even the flooring is a little bit different. You have to step up one more time. So you have to step up twice and you enter this leaf shape or boat shape or what have you. Into the chapel itself, and you can see the chapel is extraordinarily simple. Look at the benches. Look at the way the columns and the walls are attached to one another. They don't really stick next to one another, but they're set off on these little pin connections, these little bars. And so there's a very clear separation of everything. Likewise, the floor is separated from the walls. And the columns come down between the walls and the floors. Now I'll show you in a minute, they actually fill that in a little bit lower down so you don't have to worry about a little child falling down into the crawl space. This is actually a pretty good drawing to give you a sense of the structure up above too. You can see it there, but here you can see it as well dotted in. It's very much like a boat. with the keel, and then all of the major members coming into the keel and wrapping around to form this shape. The structure below operates in a very similar fashion. There are some floor joists or beams that run again from the columns to a central, there's actually a big concrete wall underneath along this line that they run into.
What are the walls made of?
The walls are made of wood, and then they have painted plywood on the outside of them. So there's some rough texture to the walls, but it's painted silver. Here's a shot of, here's a, what's called a, well, it's a cross section. So you can see here's where the floor ends, and there's a little piece of infill material there, so that obviously they couldn't really allow there to be no floor all the way down to the foundation. They would probably lose a lot of important things down those holes. But you can also begin to see the shape of the roof too, and the big keel, the kind of tapered shaped glue lamb that forms that keel. And there's a very nice clear picture of the floor, the columns, the walls. And another thing that is pretty interesting is that you never really see very much view of the sky itself, because there are these fins that are in the windows. So the light that comes in is very diffuse. And it softens, there's a really kind of soft quality to the light as it comes in, because it bounces on those fins. Here's another shot of the view down the valley, coming up to the church, and this kind of entry portion. And then here we are looking at that pointed corner that faces uphill. So what's really amazing is that, in spite of the fact that you can't see out of this church, there's always an extraordinary sense of orientation, because the downhill side, the side towards the altar, is round, and then the uphill side comes to a point. But here you can look back at the really, it's beautiful door and the entry, and then coming through the columns into the building itself. The roof is really spectacular, and it's, again, you know, if you think about this, I'm sure that Zumthor was very aware of Semper and thinking about it, articulating these parts. The columns that are supporting the roof are really the main thing of this building. And then the walls almost go away into this cloud-like, cocoon-like enclosure that makes the light kind of glisten as it comes in the windows.
What are these interior walls made of again?
They're just plywood that's then just painted silver. So it's not even a real smooth plywood. There's actually the texture of the wood there, and it really gives the silver a much softer quality to it.
What would you say is the width of the widest part?
I'm not sure. I would say it may be as wide as this room. Just a detail again for those of you that are interested in details. Here's that back corner. Here's that huge glue lamb keel of the roof that finally comes down to a very sharp bottom edge. This must have been really extraordinarily difficult to build. And here you can see the columns. There's a ring beam that's a glue lamb. It's also this shape to allow everything to come in square to it. Here's the way the walls are held off the columns. Here's the insulated wall with the plywood and the painted silver plywood on the inside. And here you can see the plywood comes up, and so all you get is this very sharp edge there, and then the light coming down on top of it. And then here are the little louvers that diffuse the light as it comes in.
It's the attachment of the wood up at the top there. Do you know?
I don't. It's funny that a lot of Peter Zumthor likes really hidden joints. That's part of his order of construction, that the joints aren't really expressed, but they're almost like Japanese joinery, you know, they're very hidden. And I've never seen a detail that shows actually how the joinery occurs.
One other question, the outer wall, that was good plywood with shingles on the outside?
Yeah, it's just a regular stud wall that has insulation on the inside of it. This is an insulated building. And so here it is in the wintertime. I really like it in the wintertime, too. The thing about this building that I think I want to impress upon you is that it's not a traditional building, but it doesn't look starkly modern either. It has a quality that it would be very difficult to place it in terms of time, in if you were to classify it by its architectural style. I don't know that there's a style that you could assign to it, but it just fits. And then finally, no, I think I've got one or two more. Here's some more outside shots with the bell coat, you know, again, in that ladder motif. And not only do the steps of the ladder get closer together, but you can see they get smaller as well. So I suspect as you look up at this, it's really, well, I don't know what it would be. I guess it's very exaggerated perspective that would make it look even taller than it is. And there it is up against its backdrop, which is obviously quite spectacular as well.
Does it have to withstand a lot of weight from snow?
It probably does. I would say that it probably does. This is a snow guard right here, which keeps a lot of the snow from, it allows it, a lot of places where there's heavy snow, there's actually a philosophy that you try and just, you make it heavy, you make it structurally sound enough to hold the snow, and you really try and hold a lot of it all on the roof rather than have huge hunks of it fall down.
Are you sure there aren't any windows in there? People are looking out of that beautiful scenery.
It's kind of a shame not to see the scenery.
Well, but they live in the scenery.
Yeah, that's true.
Think about it. I mean, they live in the scenery every day, and so here they go to another realm, which I think is just fabulous. They enter this realm of heaven, if you will. I think they're really up in the clouds when they do this. There's really a, you know, I almost wonder when they get on the back like that and they kind of step up into the platform, if there's not almost a sense that this thing is actually moored and it couldn't, you know, start floating down the valley. In any case, that's an example, I think maybe even the best example that I have of a building that using sticks, using tectonics, is really evidence of the power that just the way a building goes together can have in the whole sense and the spirit of a building. And that's all I have to show for you today. Tomorrow, as I said, on Thursday, I'll show you some buildings that are built with stones. Do you have any questions?
Would this be expensive?
I don't know. I suspect it would be, although it was built by the villagers, so that there was sweat equity in this building. And obviously, it was built a lot more carefully because they were building it for themselves.
Looks like a fortress.
Yeah, it does. I mean, just the look of it. But it's so different. I mean, that's what's so incredible about it. The outside. It's in the little details too, like look at the way that the footing actually cants out. And so the little skirt of the shingles also starts to cant out where it hits that footing. You can see it right here. So it almost appears as though the building is growing out of the ground.
Space below it, I mean, I'm in the river, where they have coffee hour and go to the bathroom.
No, they don't. They it's only a chapel.
Just the skin.
Yeah, right. And obviously that makes the building task much easier.
Yeah, it does.
How many people would that accommodate?
I have up 80, you know, maybe 50 to 80 people. The villagers, and that's it. It's really not intended to be a wayside chapel or a place that holds a lot of people.
It is their worship center.
It is their worship center, yeah.
Is there a pipe organ or instrument or anything?
All I've seen is this. It's a room.
So I was going to ask, do you know anything about the acoustics? I mean, was that taken into consideration
That I don't know.
Well, I didn't hear the question. What was it?
Acoustics. Whether, I can't even speculate what the acoustics might be like. Whether there would be, I wonder if there would be certain areas in the maybe if you stand right in the kind of the center of the circle at one end of it, your voice will resonate or something. I don't know. The other thing that I forgot to mention is that the floor actually slopes toward the center. So it's not even flat. The floor slowly slopes toward the center just based upon the way the floor beams are set. And so there's this gradual, that probably even increases the sense of it being a boat.
But a boat is a strange image in a mountain-locked country.
It is, and I'm actually the one that's making that association because it seems so strong to me. Maybe there are others.
Didn't Noah's Ark end up on a mountain?
That's true. That's
there you go.
The Ark on Mount Ararat.
Yeah, there you go.
Why that would connect with the sense of it being like if the first chapel was destroyed in an avalanche, mm-hmm. and then this is designed like things that do avalanche, it might be the Noah's Ark, which also part of protected people from the water. Mm-hmm. So this is the Ark that protects them from the avalanche.
Yeah, maybe it may be.
What are those structures on the right?
That probably is a. I don't know, maybe that's where they keep their, maybe there's a coffee bar in there.
Yeah, right.
I was going to say that that's probably where they keep candles sacramental vessels or whatever you call all that stuff, the offering plates.
Yeah, right.
The sacristy, that's the sacristy, perhaps.
What is the altar? Is there an altar?
There is a very simple altar. Unfortunately, I don't have a really good picture of. Let me see if I can find. I think I have one picture with.
No.
I was really mad because I didn't have a good picture of the front here. I don't have I had one view that looked straight onto the altar, but it turned out poorly, so I have to redo it. But here you can see it. And there's this little, almost like a Byzantine icon.
Certainly simple.
Yeah. The other question that I have are, I hope the little services that they have there aren't really long because all the benches are beautiful in their simplicity. They don't look all that comfortable. They do have kneeler. Well, yeah, I guess they each have a kneeler attached to the back side of them as well.
What did you say was the most typical material in this area? Use. It was not wood.
It is wood.
Oh, it is wood.
Yeah, it is wood.
The churches were mostly stone.
Except traditionally, the churches were built of stone.
So this wood shake or wood shingle on the outside is fairly common.
Yeah, yeah. So this was kind of going against type to build the chapel out of wood. Mm-hmm. And as I said, my only supposition is that it may have been built out of wood because it was going to be built by the local townspeople, and that's the kind of construction that they were most familiar with.
What denomination would you say would use this?
I don't know.
Probably Roman Catholic.
Yeah.
Or Reformed.
Don't they have a state church? Yeah.
In Switzerland?
No. Well, I don't think it'd be Roman Catholic.
This is kind of the German part of Switzerland, I think. So, those are just light fixtures, and they're these things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I think they're designed to just be as small and unobtrusive as possible. I don't think actually this building is probably used primarily during the day. I've never seen a picture of it at night with those lights on. Well, thank you all for coming, and please come again on Thursday.